How's everybody doing today? Welcome back to another episode of The Banker Next Door. I am your host, Dr. Joe Berquist. Today, I wanted to talk about a topic called, you know, can you be all things to all people? I really think that this gets to the heart of the strategy of any, you know, any bank or any, even any company for that matter. I saw an interesting article this week, and I want to bring this up real quick. So this was called Heard on the Street, Wealth Management is Risky for Banks. And there's, aside from wealth management, there has been a trend recently in the banking business where a number of banks have been selling off their insurance arms. And I guess the insurance arms have not proven to be as profitable in years past. Starting around 2000, when you had the repeal of the Glass-Steagall Act, and basically banks tried to adopt, you could almost call it like a universal banking model, where they start, you broke down that barrier between investment banks and commercial banks. So now those two could become one thing. So you had the commercial bank that was doing all the business loans, but then they also had the retail side of it where they were making consumer loans and residential mortgages and doing, you know, all kinds of deposits, whether it be consumer deposits, business deposits, cash management, the whole ball of wax. But now you added in the investment banking activities where they're doing IPOs, they're doing different size real estate transactions, they're raising capital for companies. All the things that investment banks would normally do. They have, you know, they've got the buy side, the sell side, all that. But then they started adding other components. They started buying insurance companies. They started buying wealth management arms. Banks started, you know, doing leasing different things. Started getting into more asset-based lending. Lending more to manufacturers and specialty lenders and things like that. And like I said, so it was adopting more of this kind of universal banking model. And it's always, I think it's always one of those things that I've thought a lot about in terms of, you know, can you be all things to all people? And I believe the answer to that is no, because I believe if you have a very effective strategy, it's going to create what's called trade-offs for your competitors. Your competitors, they might be able to copy one thing you're doing or two things you're doing, but they can't copy your entire strategy. And if it really is, and at the end of the day, if somebody's able to copy one thing that you're, the one thing that you do well, and then that's able to put you out of business because they were copying that, they copied that one thing you did well, well then the reality at the end of the day is you really didn't have a strategy. You really didn't have an effective strategy because if your strategy is just built on this one little thing, it doesn't work. But let's talk about this article for a minute. So this is talking about wealth management. It's talking about a lot of the bigger players like HSBC. I think it gets into UBS down here. But so what they talk about is, I'll read just one thing. So the industry's love affair with the rich is a rational one. Post-2008 regulations require banks to hold more capital, which is a bigger problem for investment banking than for relatively capital-light wealth management. Among top banks in the US and Europe, wealth and asset management arms had an average return on tangible equity of 21% in 2023, not bad, compared with a paltry 12% for investment banking. Also, the trading gains made by investment banks, which depend on the gyrations of financial markets, are an unreliable source of income. Even stripping out the 2008 crash and the pandemic, they have been four times more volatile since 2004 than fees and commissions. Moreover, transaction-based fees only made up 15% of wealth management revenues in 2023. Rich clients, who are usually locked in for years, pay much more in recurring fees, holding large amounts of cash, and crucially, take out loans. This means a lot of stable net interest income, which amounts to almost half of revenues. To boot, wealth management is poised for growth. UBS Global Wealth Report anticipates that there will be 86 million millionaires in the world by 2027, up from 59 million in 2022. It is a market served by local relationships, which means the top banks only have a 32% share. Coalition Greenwich research shows that leaves room for growth in trading and corporate finance, where economies of scale are strong. Top banks share rise to 67 and 48% respectively. Digital technology, artificial intelligence, and greater access to private markets seem likely to make large wealth platforms increasingly attractive to clients as well, especially for the mass affluent who have between $250 and $1 million in investable assets. This cohort currently makes up less than a quarter of the wealth revenues of the top players, providing automated customized recommendations for them as a kind of Netflix of banking was one of UBS's pitches before the Credit Suisse acquisition. But there are risks as banks all pile into the theme high net worth individuals. Those with more than 1 million might be able to drive a harder bargain in a more crowded market. Below that line, low cost robo advising technology is already squeezing profit margins. The surge in wealth management assets in recent years has also been matched by increasing expenses. Cost to income ratios average 77% compared with 68% for investment banking and 56% for other banking lines. The U.S., where financial advisors play a more prominent role, is a particularly high cost market. And let's see here. And it says, and it kind of wraps up by saying, like, but lenders should be wary of venturing into high cost areas where they don't have a strong foothold, whether geographically or in terms of the client targets. This is why Goldman's ambitious wealth management foray under Mark Nachman, who comes with a markets and investment banking background, seems risky, even if so far it is going well. The bank's recent retreat from consumer banking came with a broader lesson. Not everybody can do everything. And therein lies the lesson. So this article is focused more on the differences between the income and the expenses and the pros and cons of basically wealth management versus investment banking. And they're basically saying how wealth management is, you know, seems to be a more profitable line of business for banks. And there's less cost, they have to hold less capital as opposed to, you know, if you want to be involved in a lot of investment banking opportunities, or I should say investment banking lines of business. So, but then it gets even more granular because they get into, every bank is chasing what are called high net worth individuals. Those are individuals that have a net worth of $25 million or more. That's called the whale. That's the big relationship that everybody wants to get. If you're a wealth manager, if you're like a financial advisor, a lot of the bigger companies, they want you to have a book of business that's at least $100 million. And more likely at some of the houses, like if you look at Morgan Stanley, maybe even like Merrill Lynch, places like that, they probably want you to have a $250 million book of business. These are huge books of business and they're not easy to get. And the only way that you can build a book of that size is you have to have some ultra high net worth individuals and families in that book of business. That's how you build $100 or $200 or $300 million book. The problem is this is saying is that those clients, they hold a lot of power because they could basically say, you know, they might be able to drive a harder bargain in a crowded market. And yes, they absolutely can. So, you know, the bank might have to give away a lot in order to bring those clients in the door. And you have to kind of weigh the pros and cons of that. And now I will tell you that, having $250 to $1 million in investable assets is not what it used to be. Back in the day, you know, you walked into a lot of clients' offices and you know, you said, oh, hey, I've got $500,000, $750,000. And it was like, hey, absolutely. Come on over. Let's talk. Now, not so much. You'd be lucky to like flag down the lowest person on the totem pole if you walk in and say, hey, I've got $500,000 to invest. And I'm like, oh, hey, that's great. Which is kind of crazy to say that, but there is a lot of, I think there's a lot of truth in that, but at the end of the day, I think this all gets back to the strategy point. You know, you can't be all things to all people. And it is okay. It's totally okay to make a dollar doing what you're good at. You know, you create a niche, you create a specialty for yourself in the market, and you work that niche and you work it again. You work it again. I always go back to, if anybody ever read the book Good to Great by Jim Collins. Jim Collins talks about the flywheel, and he talks about cranking the flywheel, and he talks about how the most successful companies, they just continue to crank that flywheel harder and faster and longer and just keep going and going and going and crank. And how you crank on something is by focusing on your specialty, on your niche, by making a dollar at what you're good at and just making that dot, making another dollar and another dollar, another dollar. And you just keep cranking and you keep pressing that momentum and keep growing bigger and bigger and bigger off of that one thing. And that, you know, you don't need to have 100 product lines, and you don't need to have 10 different lines of businesses, and you don't need to have all that in order to create an incredibly successful company. You just have to have a great niche and a great strategy, and just work it again and again and again. So again, like I said, just interesting thing. A lot of great things to think about. So I think if you run a company, if you're thinking about starting a company, or if you work at a bank that is maybe thinking about going into a certain product line, I think this should be, you know, kind of food for thought. You know, who is your target market? Who's your focus? What's the customer you're looking for? Do you already serve them? And if you don't, do you really want to go down this road? Like, is the juice worth the squeeze, as it were? You know, is this, and does this really, by going down this road, does this also play into the bank's larger strategy, as it were? You know, to, you know, or are you going to be, you know, kind of wasting your time and wasting a lot of money creating something or going off on some endeavor that just really is not going to be extremely profitable for the bank at the end of the day? So like I said, just a lot of food for thought here, whatever, but the question remains, can you be all things to all people? And I think the answer to that is no, you cannot be all things to all people. You have to, like I said, you have to create a niche, you have to create a place in the market, and then you have to work that. You have to make sure that you have put together a really good strategy. And I'm gonna do a whole episode on strategy coming up, where I'm gonna break down what is a good strategy versus a bad strategy. I'm gonna give some really good examples of that in the banking world. And I think people will really enjoy seeing that. But anyway, so that's all I got on this episode. I hope people will tune into some of the other episodes that I've posted this weekend, as well as some of the past episodes. I've actually gone over 100 already, which is pretty amazing. And so please come in and check out some of the other stuff. Make sure to check us out on YouTube, Rumble, and all major podcast platforms. Make sure to check out thebankernextdoor.com, and I will see you all again real soon. Thanks a lot.